1. Scheduled meeting dates for post-the local government elections. A report by Director of Resources, Mr Blair.
Thanks, Provost. This report proposes a meeting schedule to cover the period from the May Council elections through to the end of the calendar year in December 2017. Details are set out in the body of the report, and the Council is invited to consider the recommendation on page 123 of today's papers, noting the intention to move Council meetings to Tuesday mornings. Thank you, Provost.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr Blair. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think we should just agree this. It's good practice to put something in place, even if it is a temporary schedule for any new administration. Obviously, when the new administration comes in, they can decide on a new schedule if they wish. Thank you.
Councillor Mulligan.
Provost, didn't have any real problems with this, except to ask the question. I would have thought any new administration will want to be in place, not have to wait nearly 2.5-3 weeks to get in place, and just wonder whether or no Tuesday the 23rd of May for the first council meeting is too long a delay before you see the new administration in place, and wonder if we should consider a week earlier.
I think it would be prudent to allow that amount of time for any discussions that need to be taken regarding the setup of any new council, what positions they should be taking. I don't think we should rush into anything, but is there any good reason why officers should think it is the 23rd and not any other time?
23rd is designed just to do the necessary paperwork and ensure all councillors have got the decorations of office and complete, so very much in the hands of the council, although my preference would be for the 23rd.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. I think we just go ahead with this proposed schedule, and after the 23rd, should the new administration make changes, that's entirely their decision. Thank you.
Could I have a seconder for the recommendation, please? Councillor Constable. Thank you. Item 8.3, the Financial Strategy 2017-18 to 2021-22. Sorry, 8.2. I don't have. Could I have a copy of that? Okay. Okay, it's item 8.2, the Edinburgh South East Scotland City Region Deal Update Report by Kenneth Laurie, the Chief Executive.
Thank you, Provost. This report provides a brief update on progress towards securing a city deal for the Edinburgh and South East Scotland region from the UK and Scottish governments. Members have previously received a number of reports and also more detailed briefing session in relation to a potential city deal, and work has been ongoing for really quite an extended period now. On the basis of the most recent work, there has been further detailed negotiation with UK and Scottish Government officials. A statement about progress in pursuing a city deal was also contained in the Chancellor of the Exchequer's autumn statement, and it is now hoped that this could be secured potentially in the spring of this year. In short, the city deal seeks to accelerate the rate of investment and economic growth in the region by capitalising on existing assets through an inclusive and sustainable growth model. The key elements of the city deal are outlined in section 3.3, and these include specifically innovation, employability and skills, low carbon, an affordable housing programme and infrastructure. At section 3.3.8, there is a brief update on the position in relation to governance, and at 4.1 in relation to resources, whilst we still don't have absolute clarity on the exact nature of the funding models that is still currently under negotiation. At its meeting on the 28th of June last year, the Council agreed to earmark £12 million of the capital fund to be available to contribute to city deal projects. The recommendations before the Council today are simply to note continued progress since the previous update to Council and to note the ambition to achieve an agreed heads of term document during the spring of 2017. However, I would add, in relation to the second recommendation specifically, that I'd hope to be in a position very soon to share more detailed outputs of the negotiation with elected members, and I will ensure that arrangements are put in place to do that, so members can begin to see the details of the emerging deal.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. I propose that we accept these recommendations, mainly because the South East Scotland City deal is a really important deal for Midlothian, and the prospect of receiving substantial financial investment to support our plans to improve infrastructure and economic circumstances are too good a chance to miss. It would be shameful if we, the local councillors, let this opportunity pass us. So I urge everyone to consider it carefully and to support me in my accepting the recommendations.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Provost, we have no problem with the recommendations that's here. I'm glad to hear the Chief Executive saying he's going to come back with even further details. I hope that he's taken into account that the dismay in this chamber here, certainly with a group and a hardcore group of councillors who felt that we were being treated as the poor cousins, that we were being really unambitious in this. And then the reality is we hope that what we now come back with is something a heck of a lot more. I had to watch what I was saying there, I'd hate to write a letter again. A heck of a lot more strong and more beneficial to the people in Midlothian when we see the final deal that's been proposed.
Are you seconding the recommendations then, Councillor Milligan? Okay, thank you. Mr. Callender.
Well, just to say that I agree entirely with what Councillor Milligan just said. I'm deeply disappointed at the direction that this deal is going in, and I would like to see improvements.
Thank you. Item 8.3 on page 133 of the agenda, Financial Strategy 2017-18 to 2021-22, a report by Mr. Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Provost, the financial strategy report on today's agenda was reissued on Friday to reflect the additional resources announced by Government during the Budget Bill Stage 1 debate in Parliament on the 2nd of February. The report provides Council with an update on the financial strategy for 5 years, 2017-18 through to 2021-22. However, at its simplest, they ask Council to consider two decisions. Firstly, to set Council tax for the year ahead, as set out in Appendix 1, for which a 3% increase is recommended. Secondly, and as a consequence of the decisions made on the 20th of December, the settlement and today's decision on council tax, then to determine a budget for 2017-18, which is detailed in Appendix 2. The report sets out the latest position with the various factors which impact on the 17-18 budget and indeed the projections for later years. Section 3 of the report provides an update on the revised government grant settlement. Section 5, council tax, including both reform and the proposed 3% increase. Section 5 sets out the expected cost of services for 2017-18 and projections for later years, with a shortfall between income and expenditure before any changes of £12.431 million for 17-18 and potentially, based on the assumptions in the paper, rising to some £54 million by 21-22. Section 6 then goes on to highlight the impact of the various key assumptions around grant and employee pay and help members understand the impact that those two factors alone can potentially have on the projections for later years. Section 7 sets out the proposed allocation to the Midlothian IJB, and then Section 8 goes on to provide details of the change programme. That's a programme of activity designed to address the budget shortfall. That programme in 17-18 leads to a reduction in the budget gap to £3.970 million, which it is proposed now be met from reserves. The gap for later years, again based on the assumptions in the report, would be some £8.4 million for 18-19, again potentially rising to over £30 million by 21-22. Members should also note at Section 8.6 that the decision of Council on 20th of December in respect of music tuition would not be achievable given the draft guidance available for the Attainment Scotland Fund, and accordingly the savings have been reduced to reflect this. Section 7 sets out the impact of the proposed budget on available reserves. There would remain a contingent reserve of some £5.408 million, which equates to 2.7% of the Council's net expenditure. Provost, the recommendations, of which there are 8, are set out in Section 14. My apologies to members for the incorrect numbering for some of those, and today Council is asked to consider those recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. I think you mean the lettering of the recommendations. And you're the accountant? My goodness. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. This was certainly an exceptional and very important budget. The Scottish Government have set a budget which will undoubtedly have a positive impact on our economy, our public services, our communities and our environment. Plans that will be supported for the first time by income tax proposals made under the powers devolved to us by the Scotland Act 2016. The Scottish Government have also set a shining example, one that members here could perhaps learn from, as to how to work across political divides in order to get the best possible outcome in the context of a UK Government who continues to waste money on weapons of mass destruction, court battles on Brexit, arms deals and other such awful things. The ability of a government to listen and adapt is crucial, and I genuinely welcome the collaboration between the Scottish Greens and the Scottish National Party and the Scottish Parliament, and I hope that the recent collaborations in this council chamber also sends a sincere message of this administration's desire to engage with all councillors and all communities. Whilst we might not always agree, I remember December's meeting, the second half, for more positive reasons. There were very many valid points made, and I thank both Councillor Milligan and Councillor De Vink for their contributions. And I would like to update Council that I have met with Councillor Milligan, as I said that I would do in the December meeting, and with the assistance of finance colleagues, aim to give absolute consideration to those proposals and hope that any new administration affords the same courtesy, particularly as we look to longer-term plans that were referenced in that meeting. In this budget, we're asked to consider the recommendations to set council tax and balance our budget. The Scottish Government's budget plans focus on stabilising and growing our economy, empowering our communities, protecting our environment, promoting equality and improving our public services. And I think the recommendations laid out in this new amended paper reflect that very well. But of course, our plans must also be framed by other wider economic and political factors, such as the impact of the Brexit vote, and the likelihood that in the long term we face many challenges, and that's referenced widely in this paper. I am, of course, disappointed that Scottish Labour voted against the budget and, of course, the additional settlement to local government, the additional funding for educational attainment, increased capital resources and increased revenues from council tax, and the real terms protection for frontline policing and a real terms increase in total funding to the National Health Service. Increases to frontline NHS budgets being invested in primary care, community care, social care and mental health are vital. And of course, the additional £100 million of resource funding and £30 million of capital funding that could be provided through government resources. I think everyone would like this to be a better settlement. I don't shy away from that, and nor do my Scottish Parliament colleagues. However, the Scottish Government have taken the right approach under the constraints of the Chancellor, and the approach that I've laid out here today in cooperation with finance colleagues and following on from the decisions taken in the December budget will give the best deal for taxpayers across Midlothian. And with that, I'm happy to move the recommendations.
Councillor Milligan.
Chairman, it is disappointing that Labour's position in Scottish Parliament wasn't adopted, and we would have seen the full effect of the cuts for the Scottish SNP government being restored to councils. I'll go back to the last meeting that Kelly talks about, and we did have a reasonably constructive meeting where there was no change in the way that the SNP were prepared to do this. And as she says, she welcomes the way that the Scottish Government and the Green Party came to agreements away from there. I sometimes wonder, and I think I've seen one statement that talked about us spending £16,000 to record this so people could see how we were working. And I think, as one person put it, to then go and do deals behind closed doors somewhere else wasn't what had been expected, and especially for the people who had actually argued to have these meetings recorded. Kelly, at our last meeting, when we were talking about the financial strategy, says this paper lends us and leaves us in a much better position than we inherited from Labour. Your words exactly. And I did watch the monitor to see what you says. So I'll take you back to the report, the very first report to come before Council from Audit Scotland. And it's an Audit Scotland report to Midlothian Council on June the 12th, where Audit Scotland say, the Council manages its resources effectively and efficiently and manages its budgets well. The Council's transformation strategy provides clear focus for efficiency and improvement. The Council is making good progress with its implementations. It is improving the way it is managing its workforce. It is making progress in rationalisation. Its greater focus on customer service. It is progressing its proposal for a shared education and children's services with Heath Lothian, something that this administration dropped as soon as they got into power. They then went on to talk about the effective political leadership being provided, a strong, focused, with visible leadership and improved agenda, and also robust challenge to officers. The first paper that came to this council, at the council meeting from the head of finance, earmarked the fact that we had a general fund balance of £14.2 million in reserves, of which only £7 million was earmarked, so just under £7 million in reserves were left. And this was after producing a balanced budget. What we're faced with here is the new administration coming in being faced with at least £4 million to be found because you're balancing for reserves. And I'm going to say it's political cowardness. These decisions should have been taken. No forced their way back to after the election. This is stuff that should have been discussed in here and the decisions taken so that the public were very well aware of what was facing them, because now the new administration coming in is going to have to find the £4 million in savings that I'm going to say, very disappointedly, that the corporate management team, having seen that and brought forward suggestions and looked right a lot harder at how we deal with this, because we continue to go on salami slicing it each year. It's no good enough. The people in Midlothian deserve better. They absolutely do. The fact of the matter here is that you're leaving the incoming administration with an absolute headache, and in the first year going to have to find a fortune in savings, and in comparison to what was left of you, it's like a car crash.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I can't really let this opportunity go without thanking my colleagues in the Scottish Parliament for bringing over £2.5 million extra to Midlothian Council, which they wouldn't otherwise have received. These are not deals behind closed doors. You have to negotiate with every single party. The fact that Labour and the Tories, they immediately from the start said they were not interested and walked away, made it very, very difficult for the SNP. They had to either negotiate with the Greens or the Liberal Democrats or reach the default position, which would have brought about huge cuts immediately to all councils and the possibility of another Holyrood election, which... thankfully, my colleagues in the Scottish Greens decided was something that the population of Scotland really had no appetite for. So we avoid that. We've brought not just £2.5 million to Midlothian Council, but £160 million extra to much-needed spending to protect local services. That's the biggest concession any governing party in Holyrood has ever had to give way to. And it's £160 million more than the Labour Party have achieved over 10 years. I accept what Councillor Milligan's saying. I agree with him that we need to have a root and branch review of how we operate this council and not salami slice. But £2.5 million is £2.5 million, and it's a slightly less of a headache for those coming in May.
Thank you. Councillor Beattie.
Provost, in the interests of clarity, and since we've been talking a lot today about accuracy,
I think I may have misheard, but I thought I heard Councillor Milligan refer to a collaborative arrangement that was being explored between this council and the Council of East Lothian for shared services. And I thought I heard Councillor Milligan refer to it, this administration dumping that as soon as they got in. And if I did, could I just reassure Councillor Milligan that actually he is labouring under serious misapprehension, because that was not the case. This council discussed it at some length, and on the basis of which the Labour group in East Lothian had actually then taken over the position of administration in East Lothian, as such, were completely opposed to pursuing any further arrangements for shared services. So I apologise if I have misunderstood what Councillor Milligan just said, but I would also like for clarity and absolutely to reinforce the position. This administration has not ever rejected the opportunities for greater efficiency, which might involve shared services, with anyone, to my knowledge. And I stand corrected if anyone has any other information or position. I'm not sure if the director would like to make comment on that position, but certainly, and that perhaps isn't very fair of me to even suggest that since she was not the director at that time, but I can assure you every possible avenue to complete that exploration of that opportunity and all the attendant savings, as well, not just of money, but of efficiency and quality of education across the piece. All of that was explored at great length and pursued vigorously, robustly and insistently by this administration. And actually, the Labour group were well informed and well advised throughout that period. And while we're on the subject of actually better efficiency, what happened to the business transformation and the participation? I don't know, perhaps I should address that to the portfolio holder. Perhaps she can better advise me what happened to that.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, I think Councillor Beattie's perhaps been along with Kelly Parry when I've seen these aliens landing. I can quite categorically remember having a real go at this administration for dropping this ball. Yous were too busy infighting with each other to be bothered meeting with East Lothian. When we were in administration, we made sure that every party across both councils were involved fully on that. The first we got to hear it was when we actually contacted East Lothian to find out what was happening, only to be told that the deal was off the table and nobody had made any representations at that stage. Yous dropped the ball on this.
Councillor Beattie.
Just to be absolutely clear, Provost, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to give this clarity to it, but I think that there is a little shortage of memory across the chamber, because Councillor Milligan cannot have been unaware of the fact that his colleagues, his Labour colleagues in East Lothian, actually campaigned successfully, I might add, and became the administration. And one of their major campaign positions was no shared services. That's a matter of public record. I even have some copies of the leaflet still available if you'd like to see a copy. Thank you.
Councillor Devink.
Could we return to the most important aspect of this paper, and that is really that we are looking on a sensitivity analysis on page, well, it doesn't have table 4. We're looking at 53 million of a deficit, of a shortfall in 21-22. That's a dreadful legacy to give to the people that come behind us, in my case, behind me, when they are going to be faced with the following administration, whoever it might be. We have to change our way of thinking, you know, to look at shortfalls like 24, 38. I know I'm taking the pessimistic point of view, but that, as a financier, I really feel is worth pointing out. And I'm really very concerned that this crazy policy that the SNP will drop in May in their manifesto, but we need to really deal with the payroll, because in the end of the day, we have in the whole of Britain, 15 million people are going to lose their job because of technological advances. And that means 1.5 million for Scotland. That means almost one third of the working population of Scotland. It's a terrifying thought. All these people need to find another job, and we need to help them with it. But we need to really do something very much more drastic than what we have been doing so far. Now, what really gets my ire is the fact that both Councillor Perry and Councillor Baxter have been saying how wonderful it has been that we have got another 160 million. But that doesn't take into account that we have 360 million removed from us at an earlier stage. So we are still net 200 million worse off as a whole. And the fact that we get tweeting from cabinet secretaries, oh, how wonderful the Scottish Government has been to give 160 million to local authorities, that is just a very false statement. And I want to make that absolutely clear. But I would like to hear from officials, and particularly the financial manager, how he feels about facing a £63 million shortfall in less than 5 years' time.
Councillor Muirhead.
I thought Councillor Devinck had asked a question there, but I'll make my point anyway. I want to re-emphasise this issue about the reserves that we hold. It's only a few months ago, back in November 2016, that this Council approved a reserve strategy which said that we should retain £8 million in our reserves. And I did, as did some of my colleagues, voice our concerns that when the administration amended the strategy slightly to say that they reserved the right, basically to ignore it, that the reserves would be used to plug the gap in the run-up to the election, and that's exactly what's happened. We're now in a situation where we're well below what our reserves should be sitting at for the benefit of the Council, and we're well below the reserves that this Council, this group, inherited from the Labour administration when it left office, despite the comments that Councillor Parry made at the last Council meeting. The perilous, or the position that Labour left us in, was a much better position now. Clearly is not the case. The reserves were almost £2 million more than they are at the moment. And when Councillor Parry welcomes the settlement and talks about the investment in primary care, the investment in the police, all I would say to Councillor Parry is, have you ever tried to get a doctor's appointment recently? Have you ever tried to get a policeman recently? The doctor's surgery in Gorebridge has just announced over the weekend that it is no longer operating a full list. It's restricting its list. That means that every medical practice in the East and Midlothian has got a restricted list. And that's an appalling situation. And I would remind you that we attempted to make constructive suggestions on how this we could help to avoid that back in May 2015, and we were voted down by the administration, who saw it as a criticism of the government. And I think one of the councillors said something along the lines that to call this a crisis is an exaggeration in the extreme. Well, it's clearly a crisis, and it's come on us. We knew it was coming, and this administration have done nothing about it. So, you know, there are clear issues with both the police and primary care that's not been addressed by this money for the Scottish Government.
The reason I didn't call the director to answer the Councillor Devinck's question, I don't think he's entitled to make political statements as to why what his situation was, to know that he's going to be £65 million in.
Sorry, all I asked is how the finance manager face what he feels it is like when he has got to face 63 million of a shortfall in less than 5 years' time. That's a very reasonable request. Sorry, it's nothing political.
Would you care to answer that then, Mr. Fairley?
I don't think my feelings are coming to it. What I would say is what the report sets out, particularly in Table 7, is my best estimate on the assumptions that have been presented to Council to what the future position could look like. And I highlight throughout the report that what you can guarantee is that these numbers will end up being different. They are very much projections, but they give a council a feel for the direction of travel. The important thing for us as an officer corps is then to be able to bring forward to council not the projections, but what the longer-term plan is to address that financial outlook. And that's work that is currently ongoing within the strategic leadership group. Table 7 also sets out the extent of the changes that are being delivered in 17-18, with £7.2 million of reductions to arrive at the utilisation of reserves that's proposed, and the increase in council tax of £1.2 million. At 21-22, that represents a set of reductions of nearly £18 million, with £6.4 million coming through council tax. But again, I would stress the importance is to move from these projections to a plan that is balanced over the longer term. Thanks.
Councillor Bennett.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be brief because, I mean, this is horrific reading when you read the even next year, a prediction of a budget shortfall of £12 million. Where do you get it from? Is it just going to come through cuts? But some people have made reference to the budget passed at the Scottish Government last week, which was nothing short of a disaster. I don't know how Councillor Baxter or Councillor Kirkbarry could claim that to be a successful budget when they were going to cut £327 million off the Council's budgets, but they're not going to cut that. They're just going to cut half of it. No. I mean, it's just crazy. There was a proposal put forward by the Labour Party to increase the band of income tax for people earning over £150,000 a year. Craig Gordon just signed a new deal with Celtic. He's on £25,000 a week. After 6 weeks, he's earning £150,000. If that band had went up to 50 pence, then you would have generated £500 million in revenue for income tax from people who can afford to pay it, and that money could have been distributed into the local authorities, and there wouldn't be any cuts.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you very much, Provost. I just really wanted to respond to a couple of remarks that have already been made regarding the provision of primary care. I have to say, although the question was directed at Councillor Parry, for myself, I can assure colleagues that I have been successful in getting appointments to see general practitioners as well as other practitioners locally. And I am someone who lives in the east of the county, and I'm very grateful to those practitioners that give me their care and attention. I know I'm not alone in having that opportunity, so I'm really not sure quite what the point was, but I think it's also worth bearing in mind that while we are concerned about this, it is something that should concern this council and many others, that at the present time, most of the practices providing primary care throughout Scotland are still run on a private practice basis, although they are businesses, although they exist within the NHS. And the decisions they take about whether or not to reinvest money in their practices or pay themselves bonuses is their decision. If we believe that we should be campaigning for a root and branch review of how the health service operates, that's an entirely different position. But what I would also say, quite in all sincerity, is that we should be most concerned that we encourage perhaps more young doctors, instead of looking elsewhere, to remain in Scotland. Perhaps an independent Scotland will encourage them to do that. We are training doctors. We're just not seeing them coming into the general practice field in the numbers that we would wish to, which is why this situation exists throughout Scotland, and not as severely, I'm pleased to say, as it is for our cousins south of the border. But I would also comment that other remarks have been made about desiring a very different way of doing business and not just salami approach. I couldn't agree more. For 10 years, we've talked about transition arrangements and complete transformation of how we do business. This past 5 years, we have seen, within this council, more transformation than certainly we ever did in the previous 5 years. I can only congratulate officers for the work that's gone on to make that possible, and the tolerance of all the council officers throughout, or everyone who works for this council, has endured a period of enormous upheaval. And for that, they are to be totally congratulated and supported. I think they have the gratitude of all of us as elected members. I certainly can speak for myself, and I think for my colleagues in the administration when I say that. To say that we are not doing as well as we should or could, perhaps that would bear greater exploration, but it would be more helpful if the opposition had perhaps participated more fully in the transformation group. And in that, with that, we might have seen a greater level of more creative thinking rather than just black and white opposition to anything the administration chose to put forward. I think this is a remarkable piece of work. I think there is more to be done, and I don't disagree. Councillor Baxter has already made the point, as have others. We need further transformation, and I would support any moves that this council and any future administrations would deliver in that regard to make this as efficient and helpful to the betterment of the people of Midlothian. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks for letting me again and again, Provost. I've got to clarify, Sir Hamir, I am in no way being disparaging of the efforts of the local surgeries in this area to cope with the huge level of demand that they've got. The fact is, though, I think anybody, members of the public, will all have experienced difficulties in getting appointments with the doctors. But I'm certainly not criticising them. We've got 9,000 people, more than 9,000 people on the register in the Gorebridge area, and they do their best to try to cope with that. I also want to clarify the point that, and I don't think this is what she was meaning, but Councillor Beattie, when you're talking about them being private surgeries, I want to be clear that I am confident, absolutely confident, having spoken to the doctors in my own surgery, that they're certainly trying to do their best with the monies that they've got. And it isn't the case that although they're run as private practices and they decide what gets spent on what, that they're not keeping that money for themselves. You know, they're doing their best to spread it as thinly as possible to recruit as many doctors as they can. They're certainly not getting paid. The doctors aren't getting paid the salaries that some of the headlines would suggest they are. And I'm pretty confident, I'm absolutely confident of that. So, you know, your reference to the private way that they operate, I think I'll just clarify that's not the case with the surgeries that I've been involved in speaking to.
Councillor Young.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, it was just to come back on Councillor Beattie's comments where she shared her experiences, which will be the same with all of us, because by definition, to sit on this council, you have to have lived in the local authority for 12 months. So none of us would be in the situation where somebody moving into one of the very many new houses that we're building will be in when they face restricted lists. So I think it's important not to confuse two issues. There is an issue for existing patients, which is that there is a scarcity of appointments, there's a tendency to move to triage systems, it is harder to get an appointment when you want, and then there's the restricted list problem, which is a much bigger problem for people who are moving into our area at our implied invitation, given all the houses that we're giving permission for. So I think probably the main thing I would say is that we should never try and pretend there isn't a problem when there is. You know, I think it's right when you're alluding to praising the people who are working there, and I agree with that. But it's just also this issue of what we do about it as a council. And one of my ongoing concerns is that having an integrated joint board is a bit of a fudge, because the good ideas that you mentioned, Councillor Beattie, and I don't necessarily agree with your prescription for them, but encouraging doctors into general practice, for example, isn't something we can do, but as you mentioned, it is one of the big things that could be done. So there obviously is a problem, but it's something that we need the Scottish Government to handle. But I don't think we can just pretend that there isn't a problem with general practice in Midlothian, because there is, and it's very serious.
Councillor Drink.
I go back to what is really the most important thing of this paper, and that is to discuss how we are going forward with the finance. Now, if you look at Appendix 2, probably worth just having a look at that, we see that there is a total funding of £198 million, while I'm reliably informed that there is other income to Midlothian that adds it all up to about £250 million. Why could the officials explain why they left all that income out?
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Sorry, I'm keen to move this along, and there has been multiple speakers that have came in quite a lot. So, you know, if it's the agreement of the council, I'm keen to sum up and move along to the next paper. If there's no objections.
Sorry, I want to hear an answer on my very reasonable question.
In reply to Councillor Devinck's question about challenging finances, I think that's been touched on and reflected on well by most members that made a contribution to the debate, including myself. I think that's something that the new administration needs to deal with.
I have asked for something so straightforward. Where is the other £50 million that Midlothian receives? It's not here in these papers, and I don't understand why it is not.
Mr. Fairley.
Appendix 2 to the report is set out with the net expenditure that each of the service areas will have for the 17-18 budget. That's consistent with the way we've reported this information to members in the past, and it's consistent with the way that we will return the information to government when we complete the POB form, as it's called, which records net service expenditure, and also with the requirements in terms of laying out information to the public when we publish information alongside the budget. So it's traditionally and consistently done across Scotland that we would present net service expenditure. That is expenditure after grant income specific to the services, after customer income, etc. So the £50 million or so that Councillor Devinck talks about is already netted off each of the individual service lines within this paper.
Why is it not possible to have the growth figures?
Sorry, point of order, Provost. Everything should be directed through the chair, and I don't take kindly to Councillor Devinck constantly overriding everybody else's microphones.
I think this item has been debated. There have been quite a few speakers. Some have got in twice. I think it's time to move to the vote now and move ourselves along.
I just would like to second Councillor Parry's recommendation that we support these recommendations. Thank you.
I assume that Councillor Baxter had done that. So anyway, okay, that doesn't matter if that's the case. Okay, those in favour of the recommendations, please show. Okay. Well, you were speaking so much against it, I just assumed that you were going to go against it. So you're, as a council, happy to accept the recommendations in this report? Thank you. Item 8.4, Financial Monitoring 2016-17, General Fund Revenue, report by Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support, Mr. Fairley. Thank you.
Provost, this is the second of the series financial reports that sets out performance on the Council's revenue budget for General Fund services up to the end of 2016. As I summarise in Section 2 in detail in the appendices, we're projecting a net overspend of £1.771 million for the year, and this represents approximately 0.88% of the revised revenue budget that we have for the year. Section 2.3 of the report sets out the movement on the general fund reserve as a consequence and a consequence of other decisions, which gives rise to the projected available reserve of 1.378, which was reflected in the earlier paper. Provost, I shall pause at this point and answer any questions on the report, as will colleagues. Otherwise, Council is asked to note the contents of the report.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Provost, thank you. I thank the due diligence of both the administration and the effective working relationship with officer teams to ensure that we keep as much in line as possible with our targets, but also continue to deliver crucial projects across Midlothian, like the various new schools and hundreds of new houses that we're building and leisure centres, etc. It's to be commended, and I'm happy to move the recommendations.
Thank you. Is Council happy to accept the recommendations in this report? Thank you. Item 8.5, General Services Capital Plan 2017-18 to 2021-22. A report by Head of Finance Integrated Service Support, Mr Fairley.
Thanks again, Provost. This report now provides Council with an update on the General Services Capital Plan, together with performance against the Capital Plan for the current financial year. Section 2 sets out the various changes to the plan arising from the rephrasing of project expenditure, projects that have been approved by Council since the 8th of November when the report was last up, and also projects which are detailed in Section 2.3, which are for approval today. Section 3 of the report sets out the expected performance against plan for the current year, with three projects expected of a small overspend of £98,000. Section 4 then goes on to set out the revisions to the plan to reflect the investment requirements for the Council's existing asset base and the revisions to funding for 16-17, and as a consequence the plan will provide for expenditure of £133.629 million and require a net borrowing requirement over the period of £49.183 million. Section 5 sets out the projected balance on the Council's Capital Fund, and Section 6 identifies that the overall level of debt outstanding on General Fund projects is projected to slightly exceed the cap by March 2021, but remain back within that level as we move to March 2022. In this respect, the issue of the level of debt outstanding cap that's appropriate is being reviewed and will be reported back to the new Council in June 2017. Provost, today Council are asked to consider the recommendations which are set out in Section 8 of the report.
Thank you, Mr Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I'd like to welcome this paper and draw attention to the considerable capital projects happening across Midlothian, as detailed in this paper, particularly so many around keeping healthy and active, which obviously contributes to our wider priorities as well. So I'm happy to move the recommendations. Thanks.
Mr Bourne.
Thank you, Provost. I would echo what Kelly has just said. I know it's a relatively small item, but I'm referring specifically to 2.3 and the projects that are being proposed. It's good to see that we are devoting long-term capital resources to health. There's great debates on the television and elsewhere about the health of not just our young people, but all people. I would particularly welcome, and I know it's a very small item and a very specialist item, the money for improvement of freestyle skiing and jumping. Those of us that watch Ski Sunday will be aware that it's something that the UK has been fairly successful in. We struggle to be successful in the big events, although we're doing not bad at the moment, basically because we don't have the facilities, but we can do very well in freestyle. So I really do welcome this. But I'd also like to highlight the fact that just maybe getting on for a decade ago, and we were sitting in this chamber discussing the future of Helen Ski Slope. And thanks to the management, the work of this council, the officials of the council, and the amount of money we've received at a national level, we've seen this place absolutely transformed. And finally, I'm sure the community in Beeslack will welcome the new pitch. Thank you, Provost.
Thank you. Is the Council happy to accept the recommendations in this report? Thank you. Item 8.6, Treasury Management and Investment Strategy 2017-18, report by Head of Finance Integrated Service Support, Mr Fairley.
Provost, this report follows on from the revenue budget and the previous item on the General Services Capital Plan, and seeks agreement to the Associated Treasury Management and Annual Investment Strategy for next year. Table 1 in the report sets out the current loan portfolio. That's loans which support the overall council's asset base, and that sits at £254 million. Table 2 sets out the current investments of the council's reserve and working capital balances, which at the time of writing the report were just short of £83 million. To fund the General Services Capital Plan and also the following paper on the HRA capital investment and to meet replacement of maturing loans will require a borrowing requirement through the period to 21-22 of some £144 million, of which we already have £40 million of borrowing secured. The majority of the balance will be secured through the Public Works Loan Board. In respect of investment, the position remains broadly as reported to Council on the 8th of November, and the finance team, in conjunction with our consultants, Capita Asset Services, will continue to review a range of investment options within the proposed permitted investments, which are set out in Appendix 1. Section 3 of the report sets out the potential indicators, with details of those contained in Appendix 2. Provost, today Council is asked to consider the recommendations which are set out in Section 6.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thank you, Provost. This paper allows officers to ensure that Council's long-term strategy remains in place, which is vitally important, as we've discussed a lot today, and allows them to work within the guidelines, codes and limits as set out in this paper. I'm happy to move the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor De Vink.
Could I have it explained exactly who are Capita Assets? This page 199, Capita Asset Services. Are they a privately operated organisation? What is the role and what is their reward as far as their advice to Midlothian is concerned?
Recognising the specialist nature of the Treasury function, as officers, we have procured the services of Capita Asset Services to give us professional advice and support on the range of opportunities and our strategy, and also to assess individual transactions as and when they arise. I don't have details of the terms of the contract with me or to hand, but I'm happy to discuss that offline with Councillor De Vink at any time.
All I need to know is who they are, because are they a private organisation, are they a government organisation, an NGO? It would be so helpful, because their role is quite important.
Sorry, yes, they are a subsidiary company of Capita, a private limited company, and I do understand that there is some restructuring going on within that company at the moment to transfer the business to another party. I can't remember off the top of my head who that is, but again, I'm happy to pick that up offline.
Council, happy to accept the recommendations in this report. Thank you very much. Item 8.7, Housing Revenue Account, Revenue Budget and Capital Plan 2016-17, a report by Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support, Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Provost. This report provides Council with a summary of our expenditure and income for the HRA account, both capital plan and the revenue account. In summary, we're expecting capital expenditure of some £18.393 million for the year. That's investment in new build housing and in the existing housing estate. We expect a small underspend of £300,000 on the revenue account itself, and as a consequence, a reserve of £29.2 million projected at the year end, the majority of which is earmarked to fund the continued investment in the Council's housing stock. Again, today, Council has recommended to note the contents of this report.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Happy to move the recommendations.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Provost. It is quite worrying when you see us sitting with a £29 million HRA reserve as at the 31st of March 2017. Got 4,500 people on our council house waiting list and a council house building programme that has stalled dramatically. Unlike the imaginary houses the SNP are claiming to build, they've built less than 180 houses in the 5 years that they've been in charge here. absolutely disgraceful. Let's hope after the election that the Fitz put on the pedal and the new administration start driving this again and get the 1,000 houses that the Labour Group moved that be our ambition for the next 5 years.
Other than that, anybody else happy to accept the recommendations in this report? Thank you. Item 8.8, Dander Hall Primary School Feasibility Study, report by Director of Education, Communities and Economy, Dr Smith.
Thank you, Provost. This report outlines the outcome of the feasibility study carried out regarding Dander Hall Primary School. Excuse me. Members will be aware that our report to Council in December 2015 highlighted that within the report for Shawfair that Dander Hall Primary School was to receive an 11 classroom extension. However, since that report was published, a number of issues have come to light regarding the proposed extension, and so the feasibility study explored these issues. The report in 2015 gave consideration to a two-stream primary school at Dander Hall, but pupil numbers across Bonnyrigg and Mayfield have shown a 50% increase in pupil numbers arising from new housing. So we estimate that we actually require a three-stream primary school. Dander Hall Primary School is C condition rating, which is poor, and C condition suitability rating, which is poor. It's a 1950s building which is not DDA compliant and would require extensive refurbishment and a lift between the ground and first floors. The report sets out four options from pages 230 to 234, and the pages that follow set out the various requirements in relation to the options. Section 5 gives a summary of the four options, and Section 6 sets out the recommendations Council is invited to consider. Section 6 sets out the colleagues' my recommendations Council is invited to consider and approve. Thank you.
I'll give members a minute or so to read this, the Labour Group's paper. Councillor Constable.
Right, thank you, Provost. I've had a chance to glance through this the first time since I've seen this. The options that we have on page 243 are to prove option 3 if the town centre site is secured. Now, as far as I can, at the first glance here, this rather looks the Labour Group motion seems to reject option 3. Any decision, if we were to make any sudden decision on this at this stage, I think it would be very premature to do so. We do want governance for this to continue, for the project to continue, for the Shawfair project to continue. In moving the recommendations, I think these recommendations, as detailed on 243, leave our options open. Whereas I can see, as far as at first glance, the Labour Group option shuts down our options. Therefore, I would really be moving the options as in the paper. And it would be interesting to hear any other arguments.
Councillor Bennett.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, and thanks, Mary, for the report, and thanks for meeting us last week to brief us. Now, I live in the area, and I've been putting out some feelers amongst the people I live here, and there's no doubt the preferred site for the new high school is what they call the Wilmot site, but it's actually just across the road from Newton Village. And when you think about it, it's going to be slap bang in the middle of the existing houses in the new houses. Easy walking distance for that, they're not in the new school. With leisure facilities, because if you go down to the site at the town centre and put the leisure facilities in there, and I know we talked about putting some leisure facilities in the primary school, but I'm of the opinion, and I would ask the council to support this today, that the Woolmot site is the preferred site for the new high school. And I care it's not going to be built tomorrow, it's a wee bit down the road, but I welcome the fact that Danderhaw has got a replacement primary school. But I would urge the council to consider, and I know there's going to be further consultation on this. There is going to be consultation with the public. But the consultation is going to be with the people that live there now, not with the people that's going to flit in about 5 or 6 or 7 years' time. And the view of the people who live there, they would rather have the new school with the facilities on their doorstep instead of down at the new town centre, which is the site of the old Monkton Hall pitch, which got, there's problems going to be there also with pumping and the shafts. This site at the Woolmot, which is not the Woolmot, it's right opposite Newton Village, would be the ideal site for to build the new high school.
Councillor Russell.
Thanks, Provost. Obviously, I concur with my colleague. I attended a public meeting last week in Danderhall. It was called The Conversation. It wasn't a consultation element of it, because that is, as my colleague said, is still to come, but it was a conversation. And there were council officers there to answer certain questions. But I certainly got the feel from the people that were there that they were happy with the Danderhall primary school site. It has been done before in other areas where you've turned it round about and you've built it on the same site. But they were also looking at the Woolmot. Now, I'm not familiar with areas like that, obviously my colleague is, but when you describe how near it is to Danderhall itself, it obviously makes complete sense to have it to near the existing people that are there and not have to wait on all the houses getting built in Shawfair. And obviously it'll cost less money.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. And I say this with absolutely no disrespect at all. I think from what I've heard from colleagues, you know, obviously very involved in the ward, and you obviously know that very, very well. But I'm just a bit disappointed to get this motion just now. I think even at the beginning of the council meeting would have been helpful. And from what I understand, there's not been any other collaboration with other ward colleagues. Being a councillor living outside the ward, where I don't have that local knowledge that you clearly do, I find it almost impossible to take a decision on something on a paper that I have known about for a while, that I've been briefed about, that I know in and out. And so I'm happy to second Councillor Constable's recommendations, but I do that disappointedly in that we couldn't have had a wee bit more time to look at that, and I mean that genuinely.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. It's more a question to those putting forward the amendment than anything. You're saying that we want to make a decision removing one of the options before consultation has taken place. If I've picked that up correctly, then for me there would have to be very strong reasons, advantages in going down that route, because one problem we have had in the past is that you have a consultation, people say the decision's already been taken. That sounds to me like we're being asked to do that. And maybe, you know, again, just receiving this just now, maybe I don't fully understand where they're coming from. But I just want to be clear on what the advantages are of going for this amendment.
Councillor Mulligan.
Yeah, to answer Councillor Baxter's point, in the paper at the moment, the preferred site is the town centre site. That's, as far as we understand, been resisted by the developers who see the town centre sites as being the areas where they can have high-density housing next to the train station, bus links and stuff like that. So, therefore, getting up that kind of land is something that they will resist. What we're suggesting here is that the preferred site now be the Woolmot site, and that the school, if possible, be built there. It's next to existing houses, it's next to existing facilities that can be used. It then saves having to duplicate the facilities in Danderhall. as we go along, because the reality is they're talking about a three-stream primary school with some leisure facilities. They're not talking about the swimming pool, the towing zones and all that. They're going to be about a mile down the road, taking up a lot of space that could probably be better used. And I very much appreciate yourself and some of the other members having had the presentation by developers who've seen how they felt Shawfield would be built out. And what they explained was the closer you got to the train station, the higher they would want to build, the more density, slightly smaller gardens, maybe even townhouses, because this would be people who would travel by train, by car, etc. And therefore, they'll be wanting to safeguard that as much as possible. Profit for nothing more than that. And I think all we're saying here is that the preferred site should be nearer to the existing towns and communities.
Councillor Baxter.
If I can just come back on that. Thanks for that, Derek. I tend to agree in principle that it should be more housing around the transport hubs rather than a school, because it lends itself more to people who are commuting, people who are travelling about, etc., whereas the school, although there will be travel needs, I would like to see that more cycling and walking, so you don't need them to be at the school. So I'm interested in this, but I just feel it's been sprung on us without and having to make a decision right now. I would like to have a seminar on this. I'd like to get a bit more information before we go ahead and start making decisions. Otherwise, I'm more inclined to keep it open.
Councillor Rosie first, Councillor Bennett, then I'll let you stomp on your...
Right, thanks, Provost. Yeah, I'm quite aware that I don't think there's anything against the Woolmet site, because it is a possibility, and I know it was sort of considered and put forward if the town centre one sort of falls. And I think I'd rather... It has been sprung on us here, and I think as councillors, we've really got to be fairly sure of what we're doing when we make a decision. A decision as big as this one, because this is big, and it really is quite important to Midlothian. I'm not saying this is the Woolmet one, it could be possible, but I think we have got to get the full picture and move forward on that. And I know there's... So we're still not certain about the town centre site, because there's still discussions, I believe, going on with Network Rail as regards the site they have. So that's not fully certain yet, to be honest. So I would just like to see it deferred a bit, seminar possibly on it, trying to weigh up all the facts. But certainly I wouldn't say, you know, this is not a possibility, this one.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. As Councillor Bennett says, the people who live there just now have been consulted, but of course there's going to be a lot more people coming there. Now, this may well be the Labour Group motion may well be the solution, the best solution. It is important to keep things open, though, as to see as the situation develops. I'd just like to know, maybe from the Director, what would be the consequences of us continuing this beyond for another seminar?
Dr. Smith.
I'm trying to think what to say here. In December 2015... We presented a paper to council and we talked about the different sites for the high school. And I'm hoping my understanding's right, because like you, I've not really seen the motion before us. I thought we had been given governance to explore with Network Rail getting the land for the high school to be at the train station site, with Woolmet being, if we were unsuccessful, gaining the site from Network Rail, then the Woolmet site would be the second choice. That was my understanding. Now, I've not got the paper in front of me, so I can't say. In terms of what we're looking for, what we're saying is we would build minimum community facilities in Danderhall Primary if it's the town centre site. And if it's the Woolmet site, we wouldn't build any facilities because it would be less than half a mile between Danderhall and the Woolmet site. So I suppose, like you, I'm a bit sort of unsure in terms of the motion. I can see the people in Danderhall saying we would want the site to be Woolmet, but bearing in mind we're building all of these houses around about, so I'm not sure what the council decision will be. But my understanding was... the council made a decision in December 2015, but I would need to check that out.
Councillor Constable.
I'm getting a wee bit of sense of deja vu here. When we moved things in Bonnyrigg to the Last Wade Centre, it was only about half a mile up the road from the Leisure Centre, and there was a lot of protest there. So you can see where some of the things are coming from. But that's why I do feel we should be making... we moved things out of the town centre in Bonnyrigg and got came into some difficulties because of that. That's why I think want to approve the present options, because they are the ones that keep things most open. And that's why I'm standing by my movement of the recommendations.
Mr. Bourne.
Thanks, Provost. I don't wish to make any comments on the discussion that's just been taking place. I think local people, local elected members are a much better place to comment on where things should be located. I just was genuinely stimulated by this paper. I remember the previous discussions we had, and this seems to be taking a lot of things forward gradually and slowly in a very meaningful way. We're starting to see some flesh on the bone. And I do particularly welcome this focus on Dander Hall Primary. You know, the Dander Hall is a vibrant, lively, very dynamic community, and I think it is important that they get the best possible provision in terms of buildings. So I do welcome the fact we're now looking at this in terms of the whole, I call it the new town of Shawfair and Dander Hall. I think the proposals for hubs, which have been previously discussed, and where those hubs are located is not for me to comment. But I think it does seem to meet the demands of the whole community of this new Shawfair area. So this, I think, is to be welcome, and it's a good long-term feature. There's so much criticism, particularly in new areas and new towns, of lack of facilities. We seem, as a council, to be addressing that. However, you would expect me to probably say this, I have only one regret in all of this, and that is that the denominational primary school is not going to be at the heart of this vibrant community, this hub. I think that's wrong. I think it's very sad. I don't think it's very equitable. I appreciate there are a lot of decisions to be made, but I would ask, when we're looking at all school buildings in Middle Lothian, particularly in the east side of the county, and when we're revisiting this particular debate, that we reflect on the fact that children who wish to attend a denominational school are going to have to get on a bus every morning, be taken out of this fantastic community and shipped to the far side of Dalkeith. It's not fair, folks, so I hope there'll be further discussion of that. Thank you, Provost.
Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah. I don't think we're a million miles away here, because basically what we're saying is the preference, we think the paper's saying the preference for the school should be the Shawfair site. We're saying the preference should be the other one, the Wilmot site, and we're really swapping them round. And I don't think that necessarily should come as a big surprise. It's no, you know, that's the only thing we're asking to change here, so I don't really see the problem with that. Or making a decision here today. We just think that the best place, in the terms of the local members, their experiences, their discussions they've had with people, indicates that, if the local members not had these discussions with folk, the other local member hasn't had these discussions, then I can't comment on that. But those who have reckon that that's the best place for it to go, and I didn't see what the problem is in discussing that today or deciding on that.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. I second Bob Constable's recommendation that we accept these proposals. And it may be that we are near a million miles away, but I can't sanction for myself anyway, deciding something on the hoof that I've only just got to hear about and I don't really know. So I think Bob's suggestion that we keep our options open, and that's the best way forward. Thank you.
Councillor Parry. Then I'll get Councillor. Okay, Councillor Baxter.
Sorry, I'm still confused over this. I had understood the option, the Shawfair option, was being ruled out, but from what Councillor Muirhead was saying, that he was suggesting that we were just keeping it, but making the preferred option, yep. Option two. Is that correct, or am I again misunderstanding?
Councillor Bennett.
Thanks, Chair. I mean. I just got briefed on this last week, and there was a consultation in Dunderhaugh last Thursday night by council officers, which we were all informed of. I couldn't attend. I don't think Jamie could attend, but Margot attended. But really, this South East Wedge has been gone on for 20 years. Mm. It was first proposed in 1997. There was a seminar 2 years ago. Maybe you remember me the date, the 2015. So it's been discussed through the wash, hung out to dry, and it's come back to us again. Now, what we're talking about is that originally Dunderhaugh Primary School was going to be extended. It was built in 1959. It's fallen into dilapidation. So this paper is considering to go for a new primary school, which I welcome. Now, there was two sites earmarked, and there's other private, Vic Vaughan's right, there's other primary schools going to go up in the area. I think one at Newton and one at Hilltown. There's also one maybe down at Colcote. So there's going to be maybe three or four new primary schools in the area with different developers. But we're getting the two sites for the high school was always the town centre and the Wilmot. It's right at the Wilmot site, but it's actually right at Newton Village. It's on the main road, right across the road from Newton Village at the end of the junction of Newton Church Road. New houses are going to be built at the back yet. They'll be starting spring. So the houses are going to be built. So all I'm wondering, with the feedback I've been getting for the local community, is that we make the Wilmot site the preferred site. Now, if it's not going to happen in the Wilmot, we've no got dealings with Network Rail. The land is already obtained by Buccleuch Estate, so the land's there to build it. You're not going to negotiate with Network Rail for land to build the school. And I would just ask that you accept the wishes of the community that the preferred site be the Wilmot site for the new secondary school.
Can you turn your microphone off, please, Councillor Bennett? Thank you. Councillor Constable.
I understand the idea to not have preferred and secondary choices here. I could add a final bullet point recommendation that the final choice between option 3 and option 2 give governance on both of these just now, but the final choice could be brought back to a future meeting of the council when the final decision is made, if option 3 proves possible. And so I add a final recommendation that the final decision will be brought back to a future meeting of the council.
Do you want to have a last say, Councillor?
Aye, this has been dragging on for 20 years. I didn't see any problem with taking a decision today that the preferred site would be Wilmot, and that would send you a message to the local community that we're taking their views into consideration. And I would urge every councillor here to support the recommendation that I'm putting forward today, that the preferred site is the Wilmot site for the new high school.
Okay, we're moving to the vote. Those in favour of the Labour proposals, please show.
Eight.
Those in favour of the recommendations as moved by Councillor Constable and amended to bring back to the Council at a later date, please show.
Nine.
Thank you.
Sorry, Provost. I think Councillor Devine voted with Labour and he wasn't counted. I think there was actually nine
votes. His hand
votes.
Went up very, very late. I think we've had this problem before when the vote wasn't counted because the hand shot up late. He knew what the vote was coming.
I think it's best to clarify that.
Okay, let's go for the vote again. Those in favour of the Labour recommendations, please show.
Nine.
Those in favour of the recommendations in the report, as amended by Councillor Constable, please show.
Nine.
I cast my second vote in favour of the recommendations in the report as amended by Councillor Constable. Thank you. I think now we will take another short recess here. 10 minutes, thank you.